National Baseball Hall of Fame is already discussed enough. Who should I pick?
Well, it's an honor to be able to write, be able to write as well. It's a bigger honor to get required 75% vote needed for induction.
Since 1964, when the screening process was approved, and a couple years before that,
1,879 players have appeared on the writer's ballot over the last 4 years, of which 72 have received the required 75% vote, while of those, unfortunately, 265 failed to receive a vote. Since 1986, when players received less than 5% of the vote, they became more unable to vote and be able to be eligible in future elections. 119 of those did not get a vote.
As you can see here, this is a timeline.
For my presentation, 1964 was the first year I completed data for this. Now, I also have data from a prior election, 1936, which I will also talk about later in the presentation. The screening process was approved in 1962, but I will not have any information whether or not it was effective for the 62 or the 64 election. I also don't have any information about how the screening process worked.
However, as is seen up there in the screen, the screening committee was officially installed, and it also was the first year of annual elections, which I also will discuss later in the presentation. The data in my study does not include the 1962 election because I don't have any information as far as who did not receive any votes from that election. And it also does not include the two runoff elections from 1964 and 1967. The point of my presentation is, as is briefly mentioned in the program, it's not to advocate anyone for the Hall of Fame. The purpose of this is to demonstrate while these players are ineligible for future elections, they did accomplish things during their career, but were not good enough to be inducted. What I'll discuss today is the evolution of Hall of Fame eligibility rules as it relates to those who receive less than 5% of the vote. Also, I'll discuss how the screening committee works,
analyze the position by error, and by data of position in the error,
and also discuss that they may be in common with each other. I also discussed briefly the four Bill James Hall of Fame prediction methods later in the presentation. Now, originally when I submitted my abstract, I had mentioned that Charlie Derringer and Gabby Hartman did not receive any votes in the 36 writers' election. As it turned out, before the research showed that they did receive a vote. Also, another future Hall of Fame boy, Wayne, who I thought did not appear, did not receive any votes in the 55 election. As it turned out, an article that was written in the Sporting News when it announced the results, it stated that Lloyd Wagner did not appear on the ballot and said what I originally said as far as not receiving the votes. The last two guys on that list are Eddie Lopez and Virgil Trucks. Those two appeared, well, I thought would appear in the 1966 Writers' Guild. As it turned out, in my original research, they were mentioned in the February 11th, 1967 article in the Sporting News. Along with Virgil Trucks. However, in a Chicago Tribune article in 1965, which was prior to the election when it was announced that Ted Williams got in, there was an article that was titled, "71 Eligible in Hall of Fame," though neither mentioned Lopez or Trucks as players who were on the ballot that year. Now, the way the writers' election worked in 1936, there was a screening process, there were interviews regarding 5% of votes. Billy Sullivan Sr., who was a dead ball era catcher, was among seven names as the original 33 names on the very first writers' ballot. Altogether, 50 players appeared on the ballot, but Sullivan did not receive a vote when the final results were announced later that month. As far as the timeline goes, how the current eligibility rules that we see now, the 5-year waiting period was first installed in 1954. 1955 was the final year of active players being on the ballot. Also, by 1962, the current rule was established where players could not appear on the ballot if they were more than 20 years retired. And in 1992, this is in, keep in mind at the time, this is when Pete Rose was about his upcoming eligibility.
ineligible band players cannot appear without.
Now, according to my notes, I was able to look up Hal Chase, who was a Devil era first baseman, and Joe Jackson, who I know who he is. They appeared on 2 outs, each receiving less than 5% of global appearances. This is a table that reflects the players who received votes between 1936 and 1960. This is also a list of players who received less than 5% of the vote. Now, between 1936 and 1960, 67.4% received less than 5% of the vote. Some players who received these lower percentages appeared on the ballot on future occasions. For example, Archer Peckinpah failed to receive his 5% on 9 times in 9 elections between 1937 and 1955. Edward Scott, who is best known for the original record holders in second games played before and very broken, 14 times in 14 appearances between 1937 and 1956, each time failed to get the 5%. Now, as recent as 1958, writers would receive a ballot, blank list, but the catch was is that we had 400 names to choose from. Imagine going to your favorite restaurant. You had a blank list of what you would order, and you had that many things to choose from.
Players were eligible at that time, between 1927 and 1953, and at that time, players appeared in the 25-year were retired more than 25 years, were able to appear in the ballot. Next group of guys. Hank Bowery, Ben Chapman, Augie Golan, Kirby Higbee, Hal Trotsky, and Rudy York were among these players. None of them received any votes. But ballot issues continue to arise as the numbers increased. There were ineligible players, and as the number of players increased that appeared in the ballot, the number of players who failed to receive 5% vote, there was a call for increasing for a screening process or a committee. There's increasing number of eligible ball players, too many players on the ballot. As recent as 1960-61, future Hall of Famer Ed Rusch also, suggested on his own that he said that they should do screen papers just as many names for Raiders to choose from. And also too many underqualified players, especially those just because in the 40s and 50s, if we played 10 years on in the major leagues, chances are you're going to end up on the ballot. And sometimes, as you're requiring, sometimes how these players go on. 174 players received votes in the 60 ballot. That's more than 3 times the 1954 total. And as far as players who received less than 5% of the vote, more than 5 times the average. And it was a 4-straight increase where not only the number of people appear on the ballot, but also the number of players who failed to receive the 5% of the vote. However, the screening process was approved in 1962, but again, not sure whether or not which election was voted for. But in 62 ballot, 40 to 50 first-time players failed to receive votes, including Harry Keene, who was a 40s and 50s pitcher. But the 1964 ballot also had some problems. There were many of the qualifying players. Among those were bad catchers like Les Moss, Charlie Silvera, and Lou Walker, who did not receive any votes that year. There were also players who failed to receive 5% of the vote in the elections who appeared prior to that. For example, Billy Cox, Preacher Rowe, and Jimmy Wilson were in that. Rowe continued to get votes in future elections, unfortunately, Jimmy Wilson was also placed on the ballot now. 1966 ballot. This was the last ballot, and this was probably the camera that wrote this one. I can't get that right, so. There were four ineligible players who were retired within the prior 20 years. Three of them were not on the way. Those three, Leo DeRocher, Chuck Klein, and Boyd Wainer, the fourth one, Michael Martin. This is addressed in the special election for 1967 now. If you go on the Hall of Fame website, it said that 1966 was the first year of annual elections, which is not correct. The first year of annual elections was 1968.
was at that time annual elections were being held between 50 and 66. And the only reason why that this needed to be addressed was with the 67 election, which in turn ended up with this final runoff election, and Brett Ruffing was a player in the Mississippi. So some solutions were made during that 67 meeting. Annual voting was approved, as was a screening committee, which was effective in the 68 election. In this period, more than 50% of players did not receive less than 5% of vote. Out of that 111, less than half of those did not receive a vote in average 17 per year. But the screening process still revealed had some problems. For example, Vic Wirtz did not receive any votes in the 69 ballot, which was his first year of eligibility, but continued to receive votes the next 9 years. Now, of those 219 during this period, 14 did not receive a vote, so the number went down, so it was only just an average of 1 year. Now, there were 4 years during this period, 1973 and 75 through 77, where everybody received a vote, and there was another case later on the presentation I mentioned where that instance also happened. In the 78 writers' meeting, Willie Mays and Luis Aparicio were originally the only names that were supposed to appear among the first-time eligibles on the ballot. However, 22 names that were not originally supposed to be there were. Among those was former Cubs pitcher and pitcher of many other teams, Milt Pappas. Now, this was addressed in two ways. One, they called for the abandonment of the screening committee, and they called for a 5% rule, which were both approved. The screening committee was reinstated in the 1981 election. During this two-year stretch, over 60% of people received less than 5% of the vote. I'm going to move along, just going to move along here. But the 5% rule was changed back in 1980 when it was changed to receiving 5% voting in the previous two elections. And one of the names you see up there are the names who were affected by it. The rule between this period, 44% received less than 5% of the vote. Of the 87, less than half of those did not receive a vote, which were actually 8 per year. The 5% rule was changed back for the 1986 election, which remained there since. As you see, those are the numbers I initially mentioned during the introduction. And those are averaged 4 per year. And during the 2 year stretch between 97 and 98, every printed ballot received a vote. Screening committee, as you can see where it addressed this. It lowered the number of players. There were 6 members of the writers who appeared on the committee. And over the number of years, there were changes as far as from the number of players to the number of players who were nominated. This is the current screening committee. As you can see, this is what appears if you ever pick up this year's Hall of Fame yearbook. This is the current rule as it has stated. Jose Rico was an unusual example. He retired for the first time in 1995, received a vote in 2001. However, he made a comeback after the other thing that he could play again, and in 2008, his second time around the ballot, did not receive a vote. Now, this one will address the data by position error. 265 players were told as part of this 161 hitters, 23 pitchers, and one player, Al Jeffcoat, was a hitter by pitcher. This is the data showing the average hitter, their handedness. Now, all equal lines spent the first half of his career as a switch hitter and then spent the latter half of his career. He spent the latter half of his career as, batting from the other side of the plate. Gordon White, a longtime Yankee, he batted from one side of the plate, and he later became the switch hitter from the second to the remainder of his career. Now, this is it now for the hitters. This is for the debuts by decade, years played, total games played, average games per season, started, percentage of games, by offensive defense position, multi-positions, and some additional items as far as players who pinch ran more than they, than they hit, than they appear on the field. Which, for example, among them were Jim Beauchamp, Jose Morales. Also, most pitch running pitching appearances by Lenny Harris, and most pitch running appearances by Willie Smith. These are the average pitcher's totals. And this shows you how many pitchers were right-handed and left-handed. There were no switch pitchers. There was no time for these in this round. These were debuts by decade, years played, games pitched, started, percentage of games started, as well as games relieved, percentage of games relieved. And as you can see in the bottom, Jack Abram, by Ken and Joe Horner, Bob Lauder, Todd Worrell appeared in all of their games in the league. Hal Jethcoat, as I mentioned, spent his first 6 seasons playing mostly in the outfield and spent the latter day of his career as a right-handed relief pitcher. Most of these were hitters. Most of these were right-hand pitchers, and most of these players appeared between the 60s and 80s. Most of them had appeared some sort of way of appearing as well, alternating postseason. They didn't leave leaving things very much. The only other rookies in this group were Cooper and Hank Stout. Among the Cy Young Award winners were player pitchers like Steve Stone, Pete Rubovich, Mike Cuellar, to name a few. None of these hitters had very stellar hitting totals. None of these pitchers had stellar pitching totals. And a good number of these players didn't appear in half their team's games. Now, the Hall of Fame prediction system is first used in the abstract. It's used for pitchers and hitters. At this point, what I'll do is I'll have to go to my conclusion. And if anybody have any questions after the presentation, I will talk about the various coaching Hall of Fame systems. But as it turned out, what I demonstrated today are problems and issues that the writers have faced before and after the screening process. However, there are more challenges that came up during and after the 68 first election in 68. The 5% rule, had its changes, but it was finally addressed in 1979, more than 50 years after the first election. Most of these pitchers were hitters or starters, but as you can see, there's the numbers that I outlined, none of these people were had numbers that were even Hall of Fame worthy. The Hall of Fame prediction systems pretty much demonstrated that the writers did get it, did it correctly. Now, I have these years I listed in front of me. This is an ongoing form of research that I have. And as you can see, there are a number of views that I have here from players on elections. And also at the bottom, the number of players, from those who have not received any votes. Those are my sources from Prayers by James Books, his campaign encyclopedia, as well as those from the Hall of Fame, the sporting news of various magazines and newspaper articles. Now, as I said, while there are many artistic presentations about this, they're not simply database of players who have not received a vote, which is part of the reason why I want to take this on. As I said, this is an ongoing study that provided unique look at this process. And as I said, that years of information will kind of help tie it all together. I want to thank the following people. I want to thank the Sacred Frontier Research Committee for giving me the opportunity, and hopefully my name for this presentation will be that future. I also like to thank the staff of the National Baseball Hall of Fame Museum and Library, and Craig Muter, who's the Director of Communications. Also, Sabre member Bill Dean, who helped me fill in a few blanks with the suggestion of going to a couple of additional websites to allow me to look up other articles. And I also want to thank my family and my friends for their patience throughout this whole process. And I want to finally thank all of you for coming out this morning and listening to my presentation. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, sir.
Any of the players in the early elections, say 38, 36, and 39, zero buzz?
No. I really don't have that information because the information was
The information got better into the 60s because the people wrote articles in the sporting columns as far as the related to Hall of Famer, Secretary Treasurer, and around that time in the 60s was Jack Lang. And that was a huge help in my research, but early on, the way things were written then, and I'm also trying to get questions answered as far as how the process was during that time. I don't think that any data before that. I want to set data you hear about, and how many players hear about, and how many receive less than 5%. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Give me comments or feelings about the veterans process for selection.
I'm sorry?
Do you have any comments or personal feelings about the veterans committee selection process?
Well, unfortunately, I said this is all related to the writer's style, but as far as the personally, through my research, I saw there was a lot of criticism regarding the process as far as with eligibility, because it was just working a mess. I mean, nowadays it's a little bit better because now you're breaking down the errors, and I think that will help somewhat address it. May not, sometimes results may not, people may not agree with. I mean, I'm certainly happy that Ron Santo, who was one of those players affected by the screening committee process in the late 70s, early 80s. If it wasn't for, if they followed that hardline rule in 1985, somewhere around that time, Monsanto would not be with that remark next month of their years. Any other questions? Well, like I said, if you have any other questions, I'll be available outside, and if you want more information, you can see your email address, and I can send you one of your things. So, I want to thank you for your time for coming up here.